Hey guys, it's your favorite sisters with the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio. On the show, you'll hear caregivers confessing the good, the bad, and the completely unexpected. You're guaranteed to relate, be inspired, leave with helpful tips and resources, and of course, laugh. Now, let's get to today's confession. Hey, Jay.
It'd be like odd if my name was Z.
Wouldn't it? It'd be like ZZ. Oh, you'd be like ZZ Top.
That is like probably way before listeners. Like they'd be like, who? Then I'd have a beard and that would be pretty cool.
You know what? And then you'd have a big, you'd have really long hair. And then you remember that?
But stop.
Why are we even going down this path?
You started it. This is a caregiver show.
This is not ZZ Top. She's got legs.
Stop.
You knew I was singing this morning. Okay, I'm sorry. All right, let's get for real because Lisa is like, what is going on with these girls? Oh, that's fun.
Okay, let's move on. We have a guest today.
We do.
She showed up. I know.
That's awesome.
It is.
And you know where she's from?
It's cold there.
It is cold. Yes. She's got cheese. And she's got cheese. Cheese and she's cheesehead. Lisa, are you a cheesehead?
Actually, I mean, I'll watch the Packers. Oh, this is going to be so sacrilegious say this, but I'm actually a Saints fan more than I am a Packers fan.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. This is forever on the internet.
I know.
We're going to make this a reel, clearly.
Obviously. We're going to have to hide your identity. We're not going to use Lisa's name.
Lisa's name will be used elsewhere.
Let's just say this, that come game day, I'm usually very low key if the Packers are playing the Saints, because that's really dangerous.
Preach, girl. Okay. So now everybody, we just jumped right into Lisa, but JJ, let's talk a little bit about Lisa and then we're going to keep on and we're not going to talk about the Patriots or Patriots.
Wrong team.
The Saints. Oops. Green Bay and the Saints. JJ, you can go.
I'm rolling. Okay. We have a Lisa here today with us. We have a Lisa Hale today with us and she has been a caregiver most of her life. And I had to read her bio and then reread her bio to really let that sink in. Lisa is the eldest of three. That's why I like her the most. And she was raised in a single parent household. She managed the house and her siblings while her mom was away. Lisa then cared for her mother after a debilitating stroke. Now, all this was done while she was getting married into care for a husband and a stepson, both with care needs. And did I mention that she went back to school at the same time and she works? So all I can say is teach us wise one, because that's
Lisa's
a lot
tired.
Going on. I mean,
she's tired.
Yeah, she's like a lot of people. I totally understand. I'll jump in and I'll say, okay, I understand single moms. And so same thing, our parents both worked. So you got all those responsibilities with brothers, sisters, you know, all that, whatever. And, but then tell us a little bit about how you got into caregiving. Like when you really stepped in full time, how did that get started?
Okay. It's really stepping in full time with caregiving. You have to go back to when I was helping to take care of, you know, Heather and Bruce, because mom was working. I was typical Gen X, you know, you hear about Gen X all the time. We were the latchkey kids. We took care of ourselves. Right. So, you know, I took care of myself. I took care of my brother and my sister. And then, you know, mom would come home and whatever. But as the adulting began, and this is something I didn't mention in my bio because it's one of those things that I never really think about, but it was very, very hard on my mom. And there was at one point where she tried to take her life. Mm-hmm. So when she did that, I really had to step up. I was in college at the time. I had to take care of everybody. I believe she was still in high school. So she was getting close to graduating. My brother was already in the Air Force, so that he was taken care of. But I, you know, when she came out of the hospital, she came to live with me. Mm-hmm. I had to make sure everything was okay. I had to watch out for her. So my 20s at that point.
Yeah.
And then it just kept going. You know, it kept being my responsibility every time something would happen. You know, I would try to leave and go and do my life, but I would always come back and take care of mom. So.
Wow. Was your mom, let me ask you this, was your mom young, like young when she had you?
She was like, young? She was like she was 20 when she had me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our mom was, and mom and dad got married young, like literally the moment they graduated high school. Mm-hmm. And they had us at 19, 21, 23. That's why we're all 2 years apart. So I wondered about that because you, if your mom was 20 and you were the baby, firstborn, because JJ and mom have a very, very close relationship because JJ was mom's person. Mom's.
Right.
Because it was hard. It was hard to be young and raise a child.
Yeah.
And if your mom was single, then she you were her person.
She became single. I was 7 years old, I believe, when my parents divorced. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was early on. I was seven, Bruce was six, and Heather was three or four. Mm. So
So your mom came and lived with you for a window of time. You cared for her to get her back, help her really kind of stand back up. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you were clearly a youth caregiver if your mom was working all the time. Yeah. And I know we're going to talk about youth caregivers this year because most people don't think about youth as caregivers and the impact that has on you. Do you think being a youth caregiver drove you into kind of your profession or intent? Like you've cared for other people.
It's interesting because I think that's what, and I think a lot of caregivers that do this, I don't want to say voluntarily because nobody is a voluntary family caregiver, you know, but who wholeheartedly put themselves into it probably have that quote unquote need to be needed. Mm. And I know this goes back to how I grew up. I know this goes back to the fact that I was the one who mom relied on, you know, you're my person, you're my go-to, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, I just have to have that need to be needed, which explains some of the choices that I've made in my life, I guess, including, you know, the marriage to Dave and the taking on of Denver, my stepson. So
That's insightful, though. You know what I mean? Yeah. That like when you realize like, what kind of drives us down this path, you know, people be like, oh, is it a gene? No. I mean, because we all kind of start here. Like we all start at base and what we're taught as we grow up. That's interesting.
That doesn't sound like there's a fear there. You know, you just mentioned Dave and Denver and when you married into that, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Hold on. But there's not really a fear. It's just like, no, this is kind of a, that's just my norm. You know I can handle it. So you just kind of go into it and it is what it is. So,
interesting. Although looking back,
2020 hindsight,
I don't know that I would have made the same choices.
Really?
I mean, I absolutely adore my husband and my son, but it was hard, y'all. It was hard.
Oh, hold that thought. Cause I want to get with it was hard, but so your mom moves in with you right after in your early 20s. Mm-hmm. You're supporting her. She comes out. So then you start living your life. You're just living your life. And then your mom moves. Your mom had a stroke. Is that right?
Yeah. She was 52 and she had a very debilitating stroke.
Wow.
At this point, she was married to my stepdad, Phil. And things were going very well with her. But she had this debilitating stroke. And of course, you know, I was the one that was relied on to do a lot of the stuff because Philip just couldn't handle some of it. Mm-hmm. So I took care of a lot of that after the stroke too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just seems like such a natural part of life when you're the eldest child or, you know, a child who really cares that if something happens, you're going to pick up the ball and take care of things. Or at least that's how it's always been with me.
Were you the closest as far as proximity? Like, where were your brother and your sister?
When the stroke happened, my sister lived in the same town at this point? Or did she live about 30 minutes away? I can't remember. It's been a couple of years and I've slept. Yeah. But she lived relatively close. I lived in the same town. I was working at a radio station and my stepdad called me. You know, I was getting ready to do the news and he called me and told me and I had to completely leave, which was weird because, you know, but, you know, so he called me. I guess I was the closest at that time. Yeah.
Mm. And you said your brother had a military career. Now, was he still in the military or was he close or?
No, he was, I believe, out at this time, but he lived in a completely different state.
Okay. Mm. So he's farther away. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this is interesting because you've got your mom's married. We've got Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Phil. I like that.
Phil. Yeah.
But did you move in with your mom? Did your mom move in with you? Did Phil move in? I mean, because I think apparently Phil was a package deal with your mom.
actually, they didn't. I wasn't a what I would call a full-time caregiver when she had her stroke. I mean, he was there taking care of her and everything. But when it came to anything paperwork-wise, anything organizing-wise, anything, like, he just couldn't handle it. Mm. So I had to come in and I had to make sure that everything was taken care of.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So tag teaming.
Kind of, yeah. He was there for the physical. I was there for everything else.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. Did your mom, so let me ask you this. Did your mom have like power of attorney, medical power of attorney? Did she have all those good documents done? These are always fun questions, you know?
Yeah. Unfortunately, no, she didn't have any of that set up. So,
yeah. Well, and most people think, you know, because, well, I'm young. I'm 52. Mm-hmm. Why would I have to think about that? And those are all the things that we always try to remind folks to make sure that you've got your paperwork in line regardless.
Right.
Because you never know when illness is going to happen or crisis is going to happen. It doesn't, it's not like, hey, getting ready to do something dastardly. Could you pull yourself together?
Yeah. So. Let me tell you, that's actually one of the conversations that Dave and I have been having this year. Not to put too fine a point on it, but I mean, my God, I'm going to be 58. So, you know, I'm getting up there. Dave is getting up there. We have to think about Denver. And so I was like, what happens if something happens to me? You have no idea how to get into my computer to find all the financial stuff, to find out all this. We need to create documents for each other on what we take care of. So, you know, he needs all my passwords. Because quite frankly, I'm the one who takes care of everything financially and all the stuff. And he's never going to, if something happened to me right now, right this moment, he would have no way of getting that information. So this was actually something that we started talking about at the beginning of this year. We even put a deadline on it. You know, I want you to have this document to me by this date. So we gave ourselves time to put it together, but we're putting together passwords, information, contact people, where my life insurance policies are, all that into a file that he's going to have. And then he's getting one for me too.
Ooh, wow. Then Lisa, important. I'll jump in and tell you that is the same situation with our household. And if something were to happen, my husband, when I sign a check, because we still use checks, the bank would say that if he signed a check with his signature, they would think it was fraudulent. Like I sign his name. And if he sent it in on anything, on a power of attorney, if they say he signed his name, they'd be like, this is a fraudulent document because he doesn't sign anything. He wouldn't probably know how to turn on my computer at this point. He just is like,
oh, that's mean. Well, I mean, mine is elderly, but
mine is different. Mine is different because it's a laptop that hooks in. He'd be like, what is, I don't even know what this is. You know, he'd have my microphone on and, you know, my light, but he'd be like, I don't know anything else.
So, I'm going to tell you. True.
That is like a tip. That is definitely.
That's
like,
a tipsy.
Yeah. That is,
you know, no. I will say this though. I do know how to sign JJ's name from signing it so many times as a child.
It's very true. Because she used to write excuses for school. She can write her mom's name too.
I can write my mom's name really well. You could tell I was the middle child.
Yeah, that is a tip.
Teach your children well.
Moving on. Okay.
Moving on.
So, that is a great thing. That is a great thing.
That was
great
a good thought. Tip. I like that. Okay. So you've helped your mom with her stroke. Now your mom is still, is your mom, may I ask respectfully, is your mom still with you?
No, mama passed away a few years ago from lung cancer. Gotcha. That's part of the reason why I'm back in Wisconsin and no longer in Louisiana, because that's what held me in Louisiana was mama. And so I moved back up to Wisconsin. Wisconsin's home of the heart. Louisiana's where the family lived. So,
oh, I didn't know that. I thought everybody was from Wisconsin.
No.
No wonder you like the Saints. Forgiven.
Thank you.
That makes perfect sense. I thought you were born a cheesehead. I was going to go into an extensive amount of details into why, but no.
No, I wasn't born a cheesehead. I became a cheesehead by choice.
We're a Dolphins family by marriage. Okay. So let's go into you're caring for your mom and then you meet your husband.
Well, I met my husband when I was up here in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Mama was diagnosed with lung cancer we'd gotten everything going on with the stroke. I had a job opportunity up here in Wisconsin and I moved to Wisconsin. My sister took over as, you know, primary take care of, make sure everything's taken care of with my stepdad and my mom. I'm up in Wisconsin when she's diagnosed with lung cancer. And after a time, we realized that it wasn't going to be anything that could come to a happy ending.
Yeah.
So I knew that I would have to go home. And I eventually moved back from Wisconsin down to Louisiana. But when I was in Wisconsin is when I met Dave. my husband. Mm-hmm. And when when we met and when it all started happening that I was called about a job, they asked, did I want to move back? And it just happened to be at the right time that, you know, mom was sick. All this was taken care of or was happening. It just seemed to all fall in place. So I told Dave, I said, well, I'm moving back to Louisiana. At this point, we've been dating for about 9 months. And I said, it's up to you. I mean, you can come with me if you want, you know,
because whatever.
I didn't want to put pressure on him. He didn't want me to think that I was responsible for him in Denver. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't want to offer to come, or he didn't want to say, well, you can't go without me. I want to, you know, because he was so worried about me being his caregiver. Yeah. And Denver's caregiver. And so I was like, you can come if you want. And he did decide to move down with us. So.
Wow.
So I hear you saying that you're 9 months in. So he had already had, he had Denver. How old was Denver when you started?
Denver dating? Was, I think, 7 or 8 when mm-hmm. I started dating Dave. And Denver was an extremely tiny 8-year-old. He looked mm-hmm. to be about 4.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Denver was born premature. Mm-hmm. And he's also on the autism spectrum. And he has ADHD and everything that goes along with that. And but he was the sweetest, most loving little boy. And I fell in love with him just as much as I fell in love with his dad. So yeah, he was 7 when I came into his life, and he's been my son since then. His yeah. mom, not to put any negativity towards her, but she's just not in the picture. Yeah. She's nowhere around. Yeah. So I've been his mom since yeah. he was 7 yeah. and I've taken care of him since then.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So you're managing his needs, because that it sounds like an interesting, fun little boy with all, you know, with these needs, especially ADHD. You're kind of like, whoa, you know,
well, but Dave has some medical problems too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dave is also on the autism spectrum. He found mm-hmm. out because of Denver. He had no idea. He just thought he was weird. But Dave's on the autism spectrum, and Dave also has multiple sclerosis. Mm. So he's disabled, and he works from home with an eBay business to keep himself busy. Yeah. But
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So they go with you to Louisiana.
They come with me to Louisiana.
So how long are you guys in Louisiana? How, you know, your mom, of course, has been diagnosed. Are you living near her, or
oh, yeah.
where's all that? Where's everybody then?
We moved to the same town she was in.
Okay.
And it became me and my sister taking care of appointments, doing everything, because Phil just wasn't emotionally able to take care of a lot yeah. of this, but he did. And we, as the sister team, took care of mom and Phil together. So
yeah.
And I got to give props to my sister. We are such a family of caregivers, y'all, because after mama passed and there was nothing that was saying you have to stay in Louisiana, I decided to come back to Wisconsin. And then my stepdad, Phil, got sick and he had a stroke, and he ended up moving in with my sister. So, I mean, she was incredible, y'all. My sister is just as much an important part of the story as you know, my mom or my stepdad or my husband or my son. She stepped right in and moved him in and was his caregiver until the end of his life. So,
wow.
I love
that. She's pretty awesome.
Don't tell her a lot about sisters. Maybe what we
won't tell her. Don't
feel like that should be a real. I love my sister, but don't tell her.
Yeah, we always say that. Well, we say, like, for example, now I would say, Natalie, you're my favorite, but don't tell Emily. When I'm on the phone with Emily, I say, Emily, you're my favorite, but don't tell Natalie.
I always tell Jay she's my favorite older sister.
Yeah.
Is she the only older sister?
That is very true.
There can be only one.
Yeah, that's true.
I do that to Heather all the time. Heather, you're my favorite sister. I'm your only sister. Yeah.
Well, I mean, facts are facts.
Facts are facts. Exactly. Yep. So you go back to the land of cheese. So yes. I'll throw that in, Nellie. And so you take
Miralax.
Miralax.
And Miralax.
Oh my gosh. God.
We're totally going downhill. JJ, yes. Keep going.
So we're trying to be serious, but caregiving, you have to laugh because it is a hot mess always. But you do go back and you take Dave and Denver with you. So everybody, are you married at that point? Have you guys?
We got married after we moved to Louisiana. Okay. It was funny. He never wanted to propose to me because he never wanted to ask me to take on his disabilities and Denver's special needs. He just would not do it. And he told me that. He said, I am never going to ask you to take this on. So we're living in Louisiana. We've been there for a few months. And it's getting close to the end of the year. And y'all, I am such a, what's the word I'm looking for? Form over, function over form, rub some dirt on it, just take care of things. I'm that kind of person, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't tend to get all misty-eyed and everything, unless it's over a pet. Don't ask me why. But anyway, so he said he was never going to ask me to take that on. So as we're getting close to the end of the year, I'm realizing that I live with Dave in Denver. For the most part, I support them. I mean, he had his disability that supported mm-hmm. himself and everything. But, you know, we're all living there together and taking care of each other. And by God, I'm going to get the tax credit for having a stepson. I'm supporting. We were getting closer to the end of the year. And I said, you know, Dave, this is ridiculous. We're together. We're going to be together. We've made this commitment. So I proposed to him. And long story short, we ended up getting married. So,
yeah. And you got a tax credit. Not
that's right.
Game my game.
She's practical like me.
She's very practical. You know, here's the thing. You know, you take the benefits. I just got tired of being called Mrs. Handy. And I'm just like, we're either getting married or we're not. And it took 11 years to make that happen.
Yeah.
That was a long deal to close. It's like an enterprise deal. And so, okay. So you move back and then, so you're having life, right? And what's life like for you? Because you're a caregiver.
I am a caregiver. I do want to say where Dave and Denver are concerned, when we lived in Louisiana, Denver was young and his autism was really bad because there was a lot of comorbids with it, with the ADHD and the just fantasy land that he could live in as what happens. And we had a problem when we were in Louisiana where his meds were just not working. Something was up and he had at 12 years old, he had a psychotic break.
Wow.
So, you know, that was, I think, the toughest part. Was going through that, helping him through that, finding the right medications, getting through all of that. And at the same time, asking yourself, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? I have a choice. Why did I choose to do this?
Yeah.
But I just kept working through it. You know, when you have a child that you love or a spouse that you love, you just keep working through those issues to take care of what needs to be taken care of. And so that was me. I was just like, we're going to take care of this. We're going to do this. And we ended up, he got his meds straight and everything, but there was some hospitalizations that occurred for it. And it was some tough times. That's why I say sometimes if I had a time machine, would I do it again? And probably I would, but I would probably make some changes too, so that there was more support in those times.
Yeah. So that's a good point. So hindsight's 20/20. What mm-hmm. changes would you have made?
Oh, I think we probably would have started homeschooling him or moving him to the private school we found for him sooner. Mm-hmm. Public school was really hard on Denver.
Yeah.
So I think we probably would have done that sooner if we'd gotten the chance. Mm-hmm. We might have done a few other things if I had the knowledge, you know, before we got to the point where the break happened, because we leading up to it, you could see that the meds weren't working, that there was things that was going on. So, you know, if I could have stopped it before it happened, that would have been great.
Were there supports out there that you just didn't know about? Were there
always
programs?
Yeah. Always. And, you know, we had such a hard time. We were having problems with Dan. He was, you know, going through these very difficult times. He was living in this fantasy world. At one point, he said he was hearing voices. So we were all and it was all because his meds were completely screwed up.
Yeah.
And it eventually took him having to be in a hospital for a little while to get everything situated. there were supports, but it was really, really hard to find them. Mm-hmm. Dave's, I was working at this time. So, you know, I'm working, I'm trying to keep us afloat. Dave's at the house himself. He's doing all that he can to find the supports, to find the help. And, you know, he's trying to take care of Denver just as much as I'm trying to take care of Denver and him. So,
yeah, that's interesting. And we will backtrack on that just a little bit and say, you are working and you have been working during this, most of these episodes, because I hear you say we moved because I was just, coincidence, I had a job offer. So we moved and then we moved back because I had a job offer. So in all this time you're working, are you taking care of yourself? Like, where is your mental state? Cause you've had there's a lot of like, you're just driving up and down the road between Louisiana and Wisconsin.
There was a lot of that.
Yeah,
it really was.
And they're not exactly close to each other. If you know the US map.
Yeah. Where is your, like, where are you, like, I mean, for me, I'd be like, I need to see a counselor or I need to be doing something. Are you taking care of yourself? I mean,
absolutely,
where are you
not?
Oh yeah.
And that's one of the things, if I could ever, you know, write a book, I sat down today and said, all right, we're going to write a book on caregiving or on living this crazy life that I have once lived, I think the first thing that would be in that book would be, you know, like, prologue, don't do what I did, do what I say. It would be, take care of yourself, because it's such a cliche to hear this. Yeah. It is such a cliche, but you can't pour from an empty cup. And it is so true. So I would say, definitely remember, I know we get overwhelmed. I know we think that it can't be done without us, or nobody else can do it the way I can. The thing is you've got to take care of yourself. You've got to find the supports for yourself. I did not have it. And I went through some really, really tough times until I finally got into some therapy, you know, to talk some of this out. And I still have to occasionally, you know, contact a therapist and say, let's have some chats, because I know I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I know what I'm supposed to do, but sometimes you just need that little extra help from somebody else going, you know what you're supposed to do, do it.
I need some me time. I just need to focus on me for a little bit. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's a fantastic tip. That's such a fantastic tip. You can, like, too, now. I'm like, you're over here. I'm jotting down notes, because the reality is that there's folks that say, okay, you can talk to your friends and family, but there's something about talking to somebody who is completely independent, who doesn't know anything else, who is just neutral, and their sole focus is on you, and they're listening for things. Because I think in the end, Lisa, I think we all know the answer. It's inside of us. It's just coming to the resolution of, like, oh yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, right. I do know this. I'm sure that you didn't get any aha moments in the sense of, like, oh, I didn't even know that. It's like, oh, I really, yeah, I didn't really think about that. You know what I mean? It's all inside. I think that counseling is so important, and there's so much stigma around mental health and getting assistance with that. And,
you know, and right now, I think we're in such a weird place in the US right now. Everybody knows how important it is to take care of your mental health. But do you know how hard it is to get in to see somebody or get into a therapist or anything right now? Denver is going through a tough time. A year ago, his cat, Butterscotch, a cat that I adopted, and the minute it came in the house, he said, quote, her name is Butterscotch and she is mine.
Oh, okay.
So it was his cat. Mm-hmm. She passed away a year ago. Mm-hmm. He is still grieving still devastated over this.
Yeah.
She was his cat, his baby. You know, he took care of her. He did everything for her. And he's having a really hard time with grief, really hard time.
Yeah.
And me, of course, being the functional rub some dirt on it person that I am, I'm like, come on, you've got this. He doesn't need me going, come on, you got this, knock it off. He needs somebody who's actually going to help him through. So we've been trying to get him into a therapist for this.
Mm-hmm.
3-4 month waiting periods.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. I mean, if he needed help now because he was in an emergent situation, oh, they'd find a way to help him. But for something like this, where we're trying to be proactive on something that we can see, it's really hard to get in. There's a 3-4 month waiting period.
Wow.
And that just scares me. That scares me for the state of our mental health here.
No, I totally
in the United
agree.
States.
No, I can totally agree. That's a whole nother podcast we're talking
about. It really is.
If you really think about access and things like that. You mentioned grief And I know that our friends at Help Text is really about grief, and they send these, they're amazing, which I'll make mention to you after we're done. But we love Emma at Help Text because they're about grief. But you are such a take care of lots of people. But do you have grief, would you say?
That's an interesting question, because this past year, 2023, I lost my dad and my stepdad within a month of each other. Mm-hmm. I lost, you know, mama about 7 years ago. Oh gosh, no, I can't say 7 years ago because I've been here for 4 years. maybe 10 years ago now. But anyway, it's been a bit. I don't have time to allow myself that to grieve. So, I mean, people have gotten on to me because I didn't allow myself time to grieve over both my dad and my stepdad, because there was other stuff that had to be done. But I'm not saying I don't grieve. I do. But I think it's in a different way. I think it's when I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and have it there with me then. Then I can allow myself the time to grieve. Otherwise, I can't real. I don't have time. I know that sounds
real.
It's real. It sounds exactly the opposite of what I just said, which is why my book's prologue would be, do what I tell you, not what I did. Okay. that's such a mom thing. Do as I say. But you've got, yeah. Yeah. There's not time for it.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So I have a question, and it's a ta-da. So I want to talk about Dave.
Oh, Dave. Okay.
So I know we talk a lot about marriage and how caregiving impacts relationships. Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing. I know Natalie's talked about that a lot with Jason and his cancer diagnosis and how that changed their relationship to a certain extent, Nat, because.
Oh, it changed the relationship.
Yeah. You were like, okay, changed. I was a wife, but now I'm a caregiver. Can I be both? So you married into, and we've talked to people that you made that decision to marry into caregiving. You knew that was part of the relationship. What are the, like, how has all that impacted your marriage? Do you feel like that your dynamic is different? What is that relationship like?
I think the dynamic is a little bit different, because there are times when I can't be Lisa, the friend, Lisa, the lover, Lisa, the wife. I have to be Lisa, you will listen to me because this is for your health, you know? So there's that. Dave has a tendency to try to push himself constantly. He wants to do and do and do until the point where he can't anymore. Mm-hmm. And it makes me so flipping mad at him. I could just scream, because when he gets to that point, you know, it's like, I don't want to stop. I don't want to do this. I just want to keep going. I want to do what I want to do. Then he knocks himself out for 3 or 4 or 5 days in a row where he can't do anything because he's just used up all of his spoons with MS and there's nothing left to give. And then he's completely and totally useless for 5 days or whatever. That frustrates me. I will tell you that frustrates me more than anything, because he knows what he's doing. You know, it's like, if you just took easy on Monday, you wouldn't be here on Wednesday completely knocked out, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, there are those times when I'm like, Dave, listen to me, you know better. So, and it's hard to be, as I said, friend, lover, wife, when you're trying to be authoritarian caregiver. Damn it, I know what I'm talking about. Hush, kind of thing, you know.
Hush.
That's interesting, because I think there's so many people who can relate to that. Like, I can tell you, in working with Jason and in mom, like, mom, you cannot do that. And she just kind of looks off the other way, like, Natalie's not talking. And, you know, or can we do something different? And, or she'll say yes, and then does it anyway. And we're like, mom, this is not going to hurt you, not going to help you. And I think there's frustration. And somebody said something to me yesterday, and I'd like to kind of test this against you. You've got a lot of obligation.
Yeah.
Does that breed any resentment any moments where there's resentment or regrets? Like, because you said before, you're like, I don't know that I'd make the same decision. That doesn't mean you don't love them. That doesn't mean you don't love them.
It's funny that you ask this because Dave and I have these conversations all the time. And I think that's one of the things that has kept us so working so well together is that I am completely and totally honest with him about things. Mm-hmm. So when I'm frustrated, when I think Denver is not progressing as well as he should be, or if I'm sitting here thinking I'm going to have an adult son living with me for the rest of my life, you know, will he ever be able to take care of himself? You know, when I'm having these different thoughts, yeah, there's some regrets sometimes because, you know, I would love to be able to just to take off and go on a trip or go do something, take Dave. Let's see what we can get into trouble with, you know, typical things you want to do when you're married, you know.
Exactly.
But can I go away for a week? No, I can't trust Denver alone by himself for a week. For one day, maybe. For a week, I'm not sure about that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have regrets like that. Mm-hmm. There are times when I'll be sitting there, we're watching TV at night, and I'll look over at Dave and I'll just be looking at him. And he's like, why are you looking at me? It's like, because I'm sitting here thinking, what would my life have been like had we not gotten married? Had you not come into my life? So, you know, I do have those thoughts. But the thing is I'm not angry about it. These are the choices that I made. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do have the thoughts. I do have the what ifs. Of course, you're never going to know what the what ifs are.
That's right.
You know, and so you do the best with what you have. And so, yeah, there are times when I'm like, you know, just once I would like to be the one that is worried about and pampered over and stuff. But for the most part, no.
I agree with that. I think there's so many people. Here's the thing. I think those thoughts are completely normal. The fact that you all have a conversation and nobody feels threatened by it or insecure, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, because I do think you have to get it out. I'm a big believer in getting the bad stuff out. Like, mm-hmm. if I'm thinking this, and that's hard. Now, mind you, how long have you guys been married now or been together even? Oh, there's a lot of pressure.
There is a lot of pressure because I'm, as I said, function over form. I know we got married on the 22nd of December, but can't tell you which year.
That's okay.
We've been together
10 years.
13 years now.
13. Okay, perfect. I was going with when you said how long it's been since your mom passed. Because if you yeah. said, then I was listening at the beginning, I was like, yeah, well, you moved to Louisiana.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been about 13. I think we met in 2011. So,
yeah. Yeah. I think that what's different, what feels a little different is you from other folks we've talked to, because this is, you're the first like stepmom for someone of a disability. Your spouse has a disability. But you went into it knowingly.
Yes.
You went into it knowingly. And so some people could be hateful and say, well, you went into it knowingly. I don't know what you'd expect different. And the reality is don't be a beagle. Like, guess what? You still get to have all the thoughts and feelings and emotions, and you can still be pissed every now and then.
Yeah. I mean, I went into it willingly, but that doesn't mean that when I went into it, I knew what things were going to look like in 10, 15 years, because I didn't. I thought that maybe Denver was going to be like his dad and be able to be independent. Mm-hmm. And right now I've got a 22-year-old adult son who is not independent, and I don't know when he will be. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to teach him, but he's going to have somebody taking care of his finances, you know, even after we pass, because I don't think he can really handle that.
Yeah.
We still have problems with him counting every penny, dime, and quarter as a full dollar. And it's like, no, paper money, he's fine with. Coins, he's not. Yeah. I got sidetracked. What was I talking about?
No, you're not. No, I think it's fun. But I think that's important because now you're in a different phase of your life. So we were talking about relationship. And speaking of relationships, I'm going to go a different direction. Tell me about the other relationships in your life. Cause I hear all the people you care for, like, and JJ, we talked about, you know, what are the things that you do to try to preserve your sanity? I don't even say mental health. Let's go with sanity. Mm-hmm. Have friends, have hobbies, have things that you do just for yourself that you're super selfish about, which I support.
I love that you support it. I have a best friend that it doesn't matter what time of the day, night, just in the middle of the day, I can text and we have, you know, great conversations. So, you know, it helps to have him in my life.
Yeah.
I do have hobbies. I haven't really done my hobbies for a while because I've been extremely, extremely busy and just very the hobbies, it's like I have to put effort into them. I'd rather be a slug sometimes. Yeah, but
that's okay.
I do have, it's funny, Todd, my best friend, will say that I am the biggest list maker he's ever met because I make lists for everything. Everything.
I do love a list.
A list. And then you have to remake the list because you can't have more than two scratches off your list.
100%.
Okay.
Then and I can't read my list.
Then you have to have a list of your lists.
You got to compile it. And there's so much joy when you check that off, Lisa.
Yes,
I totally understand.
You know, so I've got a list of my lists. And in the list of my lists, there is a list of my hobbies. And I have about 37 hobbies. So the thing is, do I do any of them? No, I just have 37 hobbies.
Yeah. At least you can, the first step is naming them. The first step is acknowledging, because my hobbies are working is what most people would say. I'm like, I love to work. Why would I do something else? My youngest sister, Emily, will say, Natalie, don't you like doing something else? I'm like, I love to work. And then she's like, well, what else? And I'm like, well, I do podcasting. I do that in my free time. And she goes, that feels like
that's,
work. And I'm like,
that's work.
Why are you judging? Like, you hateful beagle. So
yeah, you sound just like my boss, Misty. Her hobby is work. You know, that's what she says. Work is my hobby. That's what I like to do. Oh my gosh.
And
no.
If you're good at it. Okay. So I'm going to tell you, Jay, we could probably talk to Lisa forever, but we're at the point, which is our favorite part. I feel like we need like some music or something. I can sing, but I'm not going to.
Thank you.
Because I don't have anything top of mind to really sing that'll really come out well. Mm-hmm. It's time for sister questions.
Ready.
Okay.
Okay. I love sister questions. Jay, age before beauty.
I can't even respond to that. Okay. So I have a little insight into favorite TV shows. Could you tell us what favorite TV shows are? I have a comment about why those are, but tell us about your favorite TV shows.
Oh, like, I love
a couple of them.
Okay. So straight off the top of the head, I'm going to give you four.
Okay.
I'm going to give you four favorite TV shows. Doctor Who,
got it.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Xena Warrior Princess, and the Golden Girls.
Oh. You added the Golden Girls. Picture it, 1932.
Exactly. Picture it, Sicily, 1912.
So, and exactly. When I read those, I was like, that's because there are superheroes in there, especially the Golden Girls. I mean, there it is. I really think that you can... I think that you are all of the superheroes.
Okay, so I'm going to... No. All right, Jay. So this is funny because now everybody has to watch this on YouTube so everybody can see, because you can't get... You got to really get a picture of all of us at this point. But Jay...
Because you can see over my shoulder.
Exactly.
Can you see the Doctor
Who?
Yeah,
I see Doctor Who. But which Golden Girl do you believe Lisa is, Jay? Because I know which one she is in my mind. Which Golden Girl? Oh my gosh,
totally.
She can't remember the names.
No. I mean, she's somewhat irreverent. She's just like, whatever.
She's Dorothy.
She's
the
Dorothy.
Oldest. She is
yeah,
the
she
oldest.
Is.
She keeps Blanche.
But she's got a little Blanche in her. That's what I was thinking.
Oh,
she's just
she's
like,
got
whatever.
Blanche in her.
I think she's got a little Blanche in her. I think she could be both. But I was going to go Blanche, but she does have some Dorothy.
She's got Dorothy in her because she's the oldest. She's in charge. She's always, she's making sure everybody's taken care of.
Yeah.
And so.
And she's like, get it in gear. That is, I don't have time for this. Just move on.
Okay.
And she's a little saucy. Okay.
So who do you identify with?
Rose. Seriously.
Unexpected. And why?
Because she is so ditzy and innocent and just things fly over her head. Oh. And she's not the smartest bulb in the bunch.
Oh.
And so I think Todd would say that I am a Rose, that I'm a little bit ditzy. But my other friends would say that I'm a Blanche.
See, I was initially I was going straight to Blanche because I was like, she's just the sauce. I would never say that you're ditzy. I'm like, this woman
is
on it.
I'm like, the structure is what threw me. Like the list.
The thing is I think Todd knows a different side of me, because when I'm around Todd, I don't have to be the completely on point getting everything taken care of. So he gets to see this, I have nothing. I can't say anything, or I'll start telling a story and it'll be a long drawn out story. And they're like, could you please get to the point of this story? Well, I will eventually, but you know, you got to tell the thing. So,
I love that.
All right. Well, Natalie.
Okay. So, okay. This is the 60 second round.
Cause my
time is running out. So
got it.
What, cause I feel like I know it, but now what is your favorite guilty pleasure that you do just for you?
that I do just for me, huh?
Yeah. You don't have to share. You don't have to tell. You can do
it. Okay. Okay. If I have a really good book and can find a place to hide and read, that's excellent. I don't get to do that very often. If it's something where I still have to be around people, a good bottle of wine.
Fair enough. That is where we will leave you. Guys, Lisa, thank you so much for coming on. We absolutely love you. This is so fantastic. And I think so much great nuggets of wisdom that you have shared. Yeah. And we just love you. You're clearly a sister.
I am.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for listening in. We appreciate you. And until the next time we confess again, see you soon, guys. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Well, friends, that's a wrap on this week's confession. Thank you so much for listening in on UK Health Radio. But before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review and tell your friends about the confession show. Don't forget, visit our website to sign up for our newsletter, sign up for the Sisterhood Advantage Club, and of course, connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, TikTok, and Twitter. You'll also find the video recording of all our episodes on the Confessions website and our YouTube channel. We'll see you next Tuesday when we come together to confess again. Till then, take care of you.